Now, an ongoing court case in Wisconsin is highlighting the issue of cyberbullying in schools. Three former students are suing their high school in Crivitz, a town 50 miles north of Green Bay, over an alleged cyberbullying case dating back to 2014.
When the three women were high school student athletes, they had posted a locker room video online without consent. The girls were suspended from playing the rest of the basketball season. The new lawsuit challenges their high school for what they say was an excessive punishment.
Our next guest is Nancy Willard, director of the organization Embrace Civility in the Digital Age. She has degrees in special education and law and creates workshops and resources for schools that want to address cyberbullying. Nancy, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. And by the way, as a loyal supporter of my local public broadcasting station, I encourage people to make a donation now.
Well, excellent. It's good to start out that way. Well, let's start by getting our terminology straight. What is a basic definition of cyberbullying?
There is no basic definition of cyberbullying. In fact, there are so many different definitions of cyberbullying. There are also different definitions of bullying, by the way. But the definitions range across the board. The bottom line is young people, well, no, people, there are a lot of older people who also engage in what might be called cyberbullying, who are engaging in hurtful behavior using digital technology.
So hurtful behavior with digital technology. So obviously some challenges in defining it. Does that make it harder to address it, to see what's going on and to make changes?
Absolutely. In the area of bullying, okay, we've got like three primary definitions. One is an academic definition of repeated hurtful behavior where there's an imbalance of power, which is really impossible to figure out. Then we've got the statutory definition. In Wisconsin, you have the definition of bullying in your bullying prevention statute. And then we have just this idea of somebody being hurtful. So because there's this range of definitions of what's going on here, that makes it challenging for schools, for parents, for students to figure out what's happening. But the bottom line is that these are situations where somebody has engaged in hurtful behavior. Excuse me. So rather than try to figure out whether or not a certain situation needs a certain definition, I suggest that what we should do is help young people avoid engaging in hurtful behavior. And if they make a mistake and are hurtful, help them figure out how to help them accept personal responsibility for what they did and then make things better.
Is part of the issue here perception? I imagine there could be a gulf between how kids who grew up with technology see their digital lives and how parents and teachers might perceive it from the outside.
Absolutely. In this particular case, we had some images of girls in stages of undress, allegedly. Apparently, no images have been found based on my reading of the documents. And in particular, when you're dealing with these kinds of images, parents and school officials tend to freak out. You bring the term sexting. This might have actually fallen into what some might consider sexting, but there's really an overreaction frequently when students are using digital technologies.
Well, what does the law have to say about how to penalize cyberbullying, maybe in Wisconsin and maybe nationally?
Most of the situations, the legal question boils down to a question of whether schools can impose punishment on students who have done something off campus. And the standard in those cases requires that schools balance students' rights to receive an education versus students' rights of free speech while not at school. And the legal standard is pretty clear, and that is that when students' exercise of speech when off campus is significant enough that it is causing an interference with another student's ability to receive an education or participate in school activities, schools do have the authority to impose discipline. And the only questions that come up in these cases is when the student targets a staff member, because then there's this question of whether there's actually been an interference with other students' rights. And what you're doing is balancing students' free speech rights with students' rights to receive an education.
And we'll leave it there for now as we continue later on our conversation with Nancy Willer, director of the organization Embrace Civility in the Digital Age. We're talking about cyberbullying in schools.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a parent, do you worry about your child being involved in cyberbullying as a victim, a bystander, even a perpetrator? How have you talked to your kids? Have you talked to your kids about cyberbullying? Do you feel like schools take this seriously? And if you work in the schools, how does your district handle this issue? We're talking about cyberbullying in schools and what responsibilities schools have for protecting their students. And we'd like to hear what you have to say at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. As a parent, do you worry about cyberbullying? Have you encountered it with your kids? Do you feel like you understand it, what to watch for? And if you work in schools, what do you have on your curriculum? Do you try to create a more positive environment so you don't get to the point of cyberbullying? How do you handle discipline issues related to online harassment and bullying? Call 800-642-1234, or you could post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We pick up our conversation now with Nancy Willer. She's the director of the organization Embrace Civility in the Digital Age. And Nancy, what advice would you have for school districts who want to craft an effective anti-cyberbullying policy?
Okay, here's the bottom line. The current approach that schools are trying to use to address bullying and other hurtful acts is making rules against this, telling staff to supervise when it's at school, telling students to report, and then imposing discipline. This approach is not working in school, and it certainly isn't going to work with cyberbullying. School officials aren't making rules for sites or apps. School staff aren't present in digital communities. Students, absolutely, most of them are not reporting. And if you impose punishment, as was done in this case, that can actually lead to exasperating the situation, can result in anger, this case, can result in retaliation. It's pulling things apart. It's not working in schools. It's not going to work. This approach is not going to work. So the just say no approach is ineffective.
So
what
do you
we
think...
have to do?
Right, sure, go
okay,
ahead.
What we have to do is we have to shift to a more positive and powerful approach to help young people foster positive relations and resolve these hurtful situations in a much more restorative manner, not a punitive, not an adult authority coming in and say, I'm going to punish you, but an adult who comes in and says, hey, you made a mistake. You were hurtful. You caused harm to somebody else. Let's talk about what happened. And let's, you know, I want to help you get to the point where you accept personal responsibility, and then we'll figure out how to remedy the harm. So the current approach to bullying prevention, if people want to go to my website, it's embracestability.org. There's a new survey I just released, and we will provide the data that indicates that what schools are doing isn't working.
I want to ask about this particular case in Wisconsin and Krivitz, cyberbullying. As you said, it ended up becoming something that was pretty personal to a lot of people. The kids involved ended up feeling bitter about, some of them were suspended from the remainder of the basketball season. The parents got involved. Some of them are running against the other parents. So in this case, were you the person to come in, what would you have done with these students and their parents in the school?
Okay. This case is quintessential how not to handle the situation and how these kinds of punitive responses that schools are told. Schools are told that's what they're supposed to do. Okay. So that's what the school did. But these kinds of punitive responses often do not resolve the situation and frequently make things worse. Okay. These were some girls who kind of got out of hand in a locker room, probably after a practice, and they made a mistake. So, I mean, my guidance at would be to pull these girls together, talk with them, figure out what was going on in their heads, help them get to the point where they accept personal responsibility for the fact that they did make a mistake. If there was anything posted, which I don't think there was, actually, based on what I've read, you know, making sure that's protected, all gone, you know, nobody can do anything with it again. And then how do we remedy the harm? So there might have been harm to the other students who were depicted or maybe felt uncomfortable, and there was harm to the school community. One of the best ways to have students who have engaged in hurtful behavior, accepted personal responsibility, realized they made a mistake, is to use these young people as teachers for others so that they say, hey, you know, I made a really bad mistake, and I want to help you not make a mistake. That's a restorative approach to resolving this kind of a situation.
And what role, as we wrap up, just a little bit of time, but what role should parents play in this?
Parents need to help their young people. They need to help their young people know how to calmly respond to hurtful situations. A lot of times these situations online explode because of impulsive behavior and retaliation. So being able to remain calm in these kinds of situations, think things through. Think about what they want to accomplish and some steps they can take to resolve the situation. And the importance of avoiding any kinds of retaliation, those things are very important. Now, I have a new program for schools. Mm-hmm. It's called Be a Leader. It's a free program, a free instructional program for schools that focuses on how to empower kids to foster healthy relations.
And we're going to leave it there. Nancy, thank you so much for joining us. That was Nancy Willard, director of the organization Embrace Civility in the Digital Age. She joined us to talk about cyberbullying and what schools can do about it. Many people have been inspired by the works of Aldo Leopold. Ron Weber first picked up the Sand County Almanac as a high school kid looking for an easy read for an assignment. He didn't realize the impact that Leopold would continue to have on his life.
I was introduced to Aldo Leopold at 18 while searching for a book for an assignment. Suffering from senioritis, I hoped to find something that I could get through quickly. I noticed this book with a sunset over water with geese flying. A Sand County Almanac was the title. And as I flipped it over, I read, "There are some who can live without wild things, and some who cannot." Being interested in nature and hunting, I decided to take a look as this book showed promise on two fronts, thin and about nature. I just happened to open the book to a page titled "Smoky Gold, an Essay on Grouse Hunting." Figuring it was a book about hunting, I excitedly checked it out. Little did I know that this book I hoped was no more than an easy way out of an assignment would be a lifelong companion, and would come to change the way I viewed nature and my place in it. I must confess that I did not read the entire book at the time. Seeds of Leopold's thinking, however, were planted in the recesses of my brain. But like all seeds, it would take time and cultivation to realize the lasting fruits. I read the book again while getting my forestry degree from UW Stevens Point. I was more ready for the deeper meanings that Leopold so poetically expressed. Since then, I've read it many times, each time learning both more of what Leopold was trying to say and how much my thinking had changed since I last read it. Much of what Leopold writes about is as relevant today as when he first wrote it almost 70 years ago. One of his central themes is we abuse land because we see it as something that belongs to us instead of a community to which we belong. It takes a little humility to admit that is true, and even more responsibility to care that it is true. Leopold was an avid outdoorsman and is definitely one of the more eloquent spokespersons our outdoor sports have ever known. It would be a great idea for every sports person to pick up a Sand County Almanac sometime. That might ensure how we engage in our outdoor sports is much more important than the number or size of game harvested. As a society, it would certainly benefit us if more people would read Leopold and, as he said, let their minds work the while. The foreword to the book is itself a masterpiece. In it, he writes, "Our bigger and better society is now like a hypochondriac, so obsessed with its own economic health as to have lost the capacity to remain healthy." The Aldo Leopold Foundation, located in Baraboo near the site of Leopold's famous shack, does a magnificent job of spreading Leopold's message. Wood from the very trees Leopold and his family planted was used in the construction of the Leopold Center. The shack, once a worn-out farm that was nursed back to health by Leopold and his family, is a state treasure. The feeling one gets when sitting by the shack listening to the wind singing in the pines he planted can best be described as spiritual. An 18-year-old I once knew saw the natural world as simply a stage on which hunting, fishing, and trapping was performed. A lifetime with Leopold has taught me that our connection to nature goes much deeper and that each of us is blessed to play the small part that we do.
Ron Weber is a writer and forester in Weyerhaeuser. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more online at wisconsinlife.org.
Now we want to hear from you. This weekend's Aldo Leopold weekend here in Wisconsin. Last weekend, unusually warm here in Wisconsin, so that got us thinking. Springtime is coming. What is your favorite place in Wisconsin to get out into nature? What did you do maybe this last weekend? Where did you go? Or what are you looking forward to? What's your big summer plan for an outdoor trip or stroll or what have you here in Wisconsin? Call in right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234, your favorite bit of nature here in the state of Wisconsin.
And Rob, you may know this about my family. We have a spring contest. The first person to see the various signs of spring gets various prizes. Mm-hmm. But one that I'm always on the lookout for is the spring peepers. Those are little frogs that congregate in little, you know, where frogs do, little mm-hmm. marshy places. And they have those sweet little peepy voices. To me, that's what I'm really listening for as we head into spring.
Peeping frogs of spring. Okay. And so what are you looking for as the first sign of spring in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, marking upcoming Aldo Leopold weekend with your favorite bits of Wisconsin nature. 800-642-1234. Got out a little on this warm weekend. Governor Nelson State Park, I wandered around there a bit. And Cherokee Marsh in Madison is always a go-to really close to us and a place to watch the seasons change, definitely. Got a little mucky. I won't lie to you. It was pretty muddy mm-hmm. out there. Did you go out in the mud at all this weekend?
We walked in the park. We went to the park near our house, and I had no jacket on. My shoes stayed relatively clean, but I was very mindful because there were the big piles of muck around in spring. That's what it is, you know, spring.
That's part of the fun, yeah. We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234 with Gary in Berlin. Gary, hi.
Hi.
How do you get out there, Gary?
Four-wheel drive truck.
Four-wheel drive truck, okay. And what do you like to do outside this time of year?
I was fishing. Now I'm cooking, making syrup.
Great. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's I've been hearing it's going to be, thanks a lot for that, Gary. I've been hearing it's going to be a good year, weather permitting. There's always last-minute risks there, but it looks so far like a good maple syrup season in Wisconsin. I've never tapped or cooked down maple syrup, have you?
Never cooked it down, but
I've gone
to some of the maple syrup festivals around. We went to one at the McKenzie Environmental Center, and who knew that maple syrup was so good on ice cream?
I've done that. Yeah, it actually was really good. And I bet really fresh maple syrup like you probably get at the festival would be fantastic.
It was pretty fabulous. And we're going to take our next caller now. We've got Steve joining us in Colgate. Steve, hi.
Hello. While I was collecting my sap for my maple syrup yesterday, I always listen for Sand Hill Creams.
They have those.
First cream yesterday.
You heard the first one?
Yep.
Excellent. Just the one, or did you hear a few of them going over?
A few of them going over. I didn't see them, but I heard them.
Great. Well, that's a fabulous one, too. Yeah, so much of spring is sort of just the sounds of spring. Those windy days and the frogs and the cranes. It really is a special time in Wisconsin. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Yeah, I didn't hear them, but on our drive to Black Earth the other day, I did see a couple of sandhill cranes flying past. That's fantastic. We're taking your calls, your favorite bit of nature here in Wisconsin, and the first signs of spring, of warming up that you're watching for, that you've seen or heard already. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll go to Gerald in Montello next. Gerald, hi.
Hi. I'm from Montello, and it was kind of ironic. I just rode by John Muir State Park listening to the thing about all those Leopold, and I did happen to volunteer at the Aldo Leopold Center last spring, did a thing there. But my first sign of spring for me is the red-winged blackbirds along the marshes. I think that's the best sign.
Yes, that's another great bird song that I love to hear in the spring. And, you know, if it, any other time of year, hearing a red wing would not be that exciting. But in spring, it's just music to my ears.
Awesome, yeah. And it was, and we did hear some cranes go over on Saturday. We didn't. We live on Williams Lake near Montello, and we heard them go overhead, but we didn't see them either.
That's great, Gerald. You're hearing a lot of great sounds. Thanks so much for sharing that with us.
And we're going to take our next caller at 800-642-1234, wanting to know what signs of spring you look for, what you're excited about, and maybe what you've noticed already. And we've got Sue next in Madison. Sue, hi.
Hi. I heard the first Canada goose in a long time, and I live near Cherokee Marsh, so that was a wonderful thing to hear.
Yeah, did that make
and
you happy?
Also, I'm,
did that make you happy?
Oh, yeah. And also, I'm looking forward to seeing the first robin. That's always a key.
Right, the robins, the redwings, a lot of birds. But yeah, that is really just the sounds of spring. We should do another show where we can play all of these bird songs to get us really excited about it. But thanks for that, Sue. Cranes and robins for Sue.
And I saw some of the same geese you did, Sue. Thanks a lot. We'll go next to Susan in Toma. Susan, hi.
Hi.
What sign of spring have you seen or heard?
I smelled a skunk the other morning.
And that's your turning point here in Wisconsin, the first skunk?
Yes, I knew that spring was on its way.
Mm-hmm. And now, are you from Wisconsin, Susan?
I am not. I moved here about a month and a half ago.
Whoa.
From Tennessee.
Okay, you just got here. Well, what do you think so far?
Well, I'm glad the snow is melting.
As are we.
Yeah, and I promise you, it's March pretty much now, Susan, so we will not have another single flake of snow. Oh, no, I can't lie to you.
Yeah, in fact, tonight, here in some parts of the state.
All right, well, Susan, thank you so much. Welcome to the state, and enjoy the rest of the winter and spring when it comes.
I, too, smelled a skunk of the dead variety yesterday, but maybe do they get more active in the spring?
I reckon so.
I think they probably do.
Judith, you worked on the Larry Miller Show. Do skunks hibernate? I'm going to go with your expertise, Judith. And hey, Judith, here's Porsan, everyone.
Hey, sure, bring me in to talk about skunks. Yeah, actually, I think that a lot of mammals get active before we think they would, but, you know, like foxes are starting to get ready to find a den and have kits, and so I think there's going to be some pretty significant action out there of all kinds of varieties pretty soon.
All right, well, let's get another call in with signs of spring, or looming spring anyway, in Wisconsin. Nancy is with us in Marshfield. Nancy, hi.
Hi.
What are you seeing, Nancy?
Yeah. Well, what I always anticipate in the springtime are wildflowers. And I know everybody thinks of trillium, but we dig a little farther. We have about 92 acres of woodlands that we spend a lot of time on, and we're looking for things like spring beauties, hepaticas, trout lilies, things like that.
A lot of those springtime ephemeral flowers that are the first ones, and then they just kind of go back, and then everything's a riot of...
I think of snowdrops. Those are the little white ones that come up early.
Yes, and actually Allen Centennial Gardens here on the UW-Madison campus just posted a picture of those starting to pop out.
Oh, the first snowdrops. Yeah. This is an exciting time. Too bad it's going to snow in Madison tonight.
Well, thank you so much for all your calls on the signs of spring. You can keep sending us messages via Twitter at Central Time WPR or message us on the Central Time Facebook page. Maybe send us some pictures of what you're seeing out there. Get a great close-up shot of a sandhill crane.